Train approaching. Stand back on the platform edge.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Gautrain Talks podcast station. With me in the studio today is Mr. William Dux, the Chief Operating Officer for the Gautrain Management Agency. Afternoon to you, William, and welcome to the studio.
Hi, Viwe, thank you.
Thank you for joining us. What most people don't know is that you've been involved in the Gautrain project for at least the beginning or inception of the project in many or various areas of responsibility. Well, could you take us through your career involvement with the Gautrain project and just broadly PPP projects in general?
Yeah, sure, Viwe. I was actually hired by the National Treasury in 2000 to form part of their PPP unit. In fact, I was the first local hire in the PPP unit. And the first engineer, by the way, in National Treasury, the first one they'd ever hired. That ended well for both of us, I'm happy to say. But it was very fortuitous timing because it was also the year in which the pre-feasibility study for the Gautrain was completed. And it was decided by the Gauteng provincial government to register the project as a PPP.
Okay, yeah.
And it landed on Treasury's desk and they said, who do we give this to? Well, there's a new PPP unit. Who in the PPP unit do we give this to? Well, there's an engineer, William Dax. Here you go.
You're the most suited with your engineering experience.
Exactly. And I was sent off down to downtown Johannesburg, where the project leader, Jack van der Merwe, was located as the head of department for what is now the Gauteng Department of Roads and Transport.
Yes.
And a very small team of consultants, which grew ultimately into the province support team.
Okay.
And my job basically was to explain to this team what the PPP process and what the PPP regulations in South Africa were and what they meant for the Gautrain project.
Yeah.
And I must say, from the word go, I think Jack and his team embraced the fact that they would have to work closely with National Treasury.
Yeah.
That they would have to follow the PPP regulations, and by doing so it would be good for the project. And I think it was that spirit of cooperation that really set the tone for our engagement over the next 10-12 years. A lot of departments kind of resist any regulation and interference as they perceive it.
Yes.
Jack and his team never did that. So I think that was a very positive thing, and it meant that we from Treasury could reciprocate.
Yeah.
When it came to giving approvals or giving advice, it was in an environment of, I think, mutual trust.
Yes.
And to the benefit of the project.
We've touched briefly on the regulations and the process of PPP projects, but if you were to give us in an overview, in a nutshell, what the PPP framework is about.
If I could summarize it for listeners, it would be that there's a contract between a public sector entity and a private sector entity, and the private sector entity has to do something that government would otherwise have done. It must take a lot of risk in doing it, and it must deliver the outputs that government wants it to do.
Yeah.
And in doing that, is entitled to some remuneration. Now, it's on the remuneration side that things get a little bit more complicated. And basically, there are two types of PPPs in South Africa.
Yeah.
One is where the user pays, and the revenue stream to the private sector comes from users. The classic of these is toll roads.
Yes.
You drive your car, you go through a toll booth, you pay money. If you don't drive, they don't get the money.
Yeah.
The second kind is one where the user doesn't have to pay and government provides the revenue stream. So this might be a hospital, a government accommodation, a prison.
Yeah.
And we commonly call those availability type payments.
Okay.
So where government pays for the facility that the private sector has built and operates and is available. So in the context of a hospital, there would be an availability payment if the wards were available to patients. The operating theatres are working.
Okay.
There's medicine, there's nurses, there's
yes.
doctors. And if any of those aren't working, then government doesn't pay. Now, in both instances, the private sector takes a lot of risk on operating the infrastructure that they've built.
Yeah.
And we can come back to it in our discussion, but I think that's a key element of a PPP.
Yeah.
Private sector involvement throughout all the stages of project implementation and operation.
You've already touched on it. Let's just stay with that topic for a moment there. In the fundamental difference between what one can call ordinary tendering process of or following the normal procurement process or doing a project via the PPP framework.
Yeah. So let's introduce a term now that we can use regularly, and that's a life cycle of a project, especially an infrastructure project. So the life cycle would go something like this. Inception, someone has the idea or identifies the need.
Yes.
Then going into some kind of preliminary design, how does one meet that need?
Mm.
Then the appointment of consultants to do a more detailed design and prepare tender documents.
Mm.
Then a construction phase during which a private sector construction company or a range of construction companies will come and build whatever infrastructure there is. Then there's a handover back to government, and then government operates it for the next 20, 30, and sometimes even longer, 50 years.
Yeah.
I think Barrow Gwynedd Hospital's been around since World War II, which would make it, coming on for 60, 70 years old.
Yeah.
So the life cycle of these projects can be very long. Now, what happens in a PPP is that government says, I'm still going to be the owner of the project.
Mm.
I'm going to identify the need, and I'm going to say how that need should be met. But instead of appointing consultants to do a design and a contractor to build it and maybe an operator or suppliers to help me during the operations period, I'm going to put all of that into one contract.
Yeah.
And this is the really smart bit. I'm only going to pay for it during the operating period. So if the private sector misdesigns it or constructs it badly or runs late with it, that's their problem.
Yeah.
And I think that addresses one of the big problems that we have as a government, is that our projects run over budget and they run over time. Maybe the third one is that when we've built it, we don't maintain it.
Yes.
Now, I'm sure you've driven over a few potholes over the last few months and years, especially as you leave the national road network.
Yeah. Especially during the rainy season.
And especially during the rainy
season. Today happens to be one of those days.
Absolutely. And you would also, I would imagine, have walked into a government office, maybe Home Affairs or somewhere, and you've seen that the computers are old or something's offline or something's not working.
Yeah.
And those are very typical maintenance issues. The potholes come because a small little hole isn't fixed in time, and it grows.
Yeah.
Now imagine a contracting system where if there's a pothole in the road, the private sector loses money. Do you think they'll fix that first hole, that patch that first little start of the problem? I think they would.
Yeah.
And that's where the concept of a PPP works in the context of a whole life cycle of the project. What one also does is looks at it from an asset point of view. So in a PPP arrangement, the government will always remain the owner of the assets. So even on our toll roads, government owns those roads. There's no contestation around that.
Yes.
But the private sector looks after those assets, and at the end of their concession period, they can be penalized or even rewarded for the condition in which those assets are returned to government or the use is returned to government. And again, that creates a nice set of incentives for the private sector to then maintain very well.
Yeah, and those set of incentives and penalties to a certain extent are not provided for if you were to go the ordinary procurement
process. That's exactly right. There's no penalty mechanism. It's quite interesting. Government has tried to move over towards performance-based contracting, but I think there's always a gap for an operator to blame the contractor and the contractor to blame the designer because they weren't part of a package in the beginning.
Yeah. Okay.
Before we move on, maybe if I can just give you one of the criticisms of a PPP, though.
Yes.
Maybe two. The first is that they just cost too much.
Mm.
So when you look at this life cycle approach, you say, wow, you government's paying a lot for that hospital bed or that prison cell, or users are paying a lot to use the toll road. Whereas on a publicly built road or prison or hospital, it's free.
Mm.
Now, that, I think, ignores some of the hidden costs. You know, the pothole example that we spoke about, who bears the cost of that? Well, be where you do as the user. But on government's books, that road is pretty much free.
Yeah.
The second criticism is that they just take too long to procure. So often in government, people say, oh yes, a PPP is a good idea and it would be suitable, but we have to have this ready by next year, so unfortunately we can't do it.
Mm.
And I've heard that a lot of times when I was in Treasury as well. And getting back to Gautrain, I think that's where Jack and his team had a very realistic approach. They knew that the preparation time for a massive project like Gautrain was going to be years.
Yeah.
And they built into their programming enough time to follow the Treasury steps.
And having spoken about that criticism of PPP projects in terms of cost, the time it takes, in what instances then would you recommend one or a government institution to follow the PPP process, having taken into context the pros and cons of each?
So my view on it is that every single large project or mega project, and we can talk about what size that is, but certainly for me anything above 300 to 400 million rand should go through the same feasibility study as if it was going to be a PPP project.
Okay.
Why do I say that? Because the decision as to whether to do it as a PPP or not is actually secondary to the decisions that get made in terms of how to implement it anyway, or whether to do it or not.
Yeah.
And often, I think in South Africa, we've seen projects that are implemented that if there'd been a bit of thought, a bit of planning, a bit of a feasibility study, we either wouldn't have done it or we would have done it very differently.
Mm.
So I'm a strong advocate of, regardless of the mode, PPP or not, always do a very thorough feasibility study.
So is there merit or perhaps benefit in writing this condition, if I may, into the procurement process or the procurement regulations? I mean, the new procurement regulations are out for 2017. Does it take into account some of this insight that you've shared with us?
So it's never made it into regulation,
okay,
but it's in National Treasury's capital budgeting guidelines, which are issued to departments. Now, unfortunately, they are just guidelines. So there's no regulatory imperative to do it. It's not enforceable.
Okay.
But I think it would be good practice if it was.
Okay. So we are still with Mr. William Dux talking about the Gautrain project as a PPP. And our next segment of the interview is about the Gautrain project having been in existence as a project for the last 15 years, operating for the last five. Would you say, given us the context of the framework and what requirements are there for a PPP, did the Gautrain project, how did it fare in meeting all those requirements?
Well, let's break that down into a few elements.
Yeah.
First, there were objectives that related to the project that weren't PPP specific. So these were objectives of really adding to the Gauteng economy, impacting on the socio-economic fabric of Gauteng, transforming the cities.
Mm.
And I think it's gone beyond debate now. I think the KPMG report of 2014 puts that to bed. Yes, it did meet its objectives.
Yeah.
When we look at the multiplier, I love this multiplier.
Yeah.
1.73 rand of economic impact for every 1 rand spent in the development period, and close to 2 rand economic impact for every 1 rand spent in the operating period, says yes, Gautrain ticks that box.
Mm.
But let's look at another element, which did it succeed as a PPP? And there I think our answer is a bit more nuanced.
Mm.
From an efficiency of operation perspective, the fact that if we walked across the road now to Midrand Station and the app on our phones will tell us what time the train arrives, and it will arrive at that time. With 98% sure it's going to arrive on the minute that it's predicted, tells us that yes, the private sector really was able to design, construct, and implement a working rail system.
Yeah.
I don't think government could have done it. I really think that in terms of the integration of all the technologies that was required, it would have been a step too far for us. Mm. So that's a big tick for a PPP.
And perhaps would you also attribute that to availability of expertise in the country, capacity, and all of that?
I would. I also think that the PPP consortium, being made up of a combination of rolling stock experts, construction experts, and operating experts, they could combine their IP and their expertise in a way that government just couldn't have. We didn't.
Yes.
Maybe on the construction side, we could have got halfway there.
Yeah.
But rolling stock and electromechanical works, no. Operating, no.
Yeah.
But I think, and the reason it's a nuanced answer, is those criticisms of the PPP framework or the PPP concept is the cost element.
Okay.
And Gautrain, we're paying now perhaps a premium in terms of the private sector involvement over that which we would have paid assuming government could have built it. So listen to that carefully. Assuming that government could have built it, we're probably paying too much now. And we attract a lot of criticism for that in terms of this patronage guarantee. But I think we've got to take that step back and look at it holistically.
Mm.
Without the private sector, we would have no project. With them, we've been able to deliver this successfully operating system. And to deny them their return on their investment, I think, is almost wanting one's cake and having it and eating it at the same time.
Yeah.
What really excites me about Gautrain, though, is that its lifetime, its life cycle goes way beyond the current concession agreement. In 2026, the way things are going now, we are going to have a revenue stream from users that is going to be higher, substantially higher than the operating costs, and is going to be, as I said before, a set of assets that have been well maintained and returned to government's use, either for putting out on an operating contract or expanding or...
Yeah.
So I think from a long-term point of view, we can even tick the cost box. I think we're going to be able to say that the costs of Gautrain, including the private sector return on investment, make it worthwhile overall as a PPP.
And also, perhaps you touched on the economic impact over time and what has been reported in the KPMG report as having been, you know, quite substantial value for what the government invested initially.
Yes, good point. In my thinking about a PPP, I'd actually left aside those economic impacts, which also a very strong argument towards doing a project like Gautrain and doing it well.
Yeah. And having spoken about that criticism, what were the challenges, or what would you describe as challenges in implementing such a project?
So let me pick two main ones. I think the first is just the complexity of contracting. You know, to write a contract that anticipates a 5-year development period and 15 years of operation, so 20 years into the future, has got to be complex. It's got to contemplate a whole range of scenarios. It's got to put contractual mechanisms in place that create incentives, create disincentives through penalties, and regulate the behavior of two parties over a long period of time. And that is a massive, massive challenge. And that's where, again, Jack having a strong team and supported well by Treasury and the expertise that the PPP unit could deploy helped enormously. But PPPs aren't for the naive and the and the innocent.
Yeah.
You know, it's a contractual negotiation during the period leading up to the conclusion of the PPP agreement, and it's a tough battle afterwards in terms of managing the complex concession agreement. So you can't sign a PPP agreement, a concession agreement, and then say bye-bye and expect it to just run smoothly. It's very resource intensive in terms of managing it. I think the second challenge that we faced on this is just it's so big. You know, there's a lot of money at stake.
Yeah.
A lot of risk transferred. And I think that led or was an ideal breeding ground for contractual disputes. And we've seen how that played out in the development period. We're very pleased that we finally put them to bed with a settlement agreement last December. But let's face it, it's more than 10 years since the concession agreement was signed. So it led to a decade of commercial to-ing and fro-ing and very expensive legal fees.
So if what I'm moving forward now into expansions and extensions project that are planned, if we are to go ahead with that, what would be the real key skill set that is required to run such a project?
Well, let me start on a very positive note, and this is an incredible achievement. Gautrain is expandable and extendable. In other words, the model works.
Yes.
If we go to market for more rolling stock as we're doing now, people are interested. Mm. If we go out and we want to extend the network, people are interested. The market is interested. The banks are interested. The construction companies.
Mm.
Because they look at Gautrain and they see a success. And they see a project that can deliver value to them. And I'm talking now from a public and a private point of view. So I think that's a major, major achievement. In terms of what we would do perhaps a little bit differently, I think we would move away from a one-size-fits-all type PPP approach. And this is not a criticism of Treasury's regulations and process and manuals, but I don't think they ever contemplated a project of the size and complexity of Gautrain. So what we would then look to do is to have a contracting model that has all the elements of a PPP, but build it around the operations and not the construction, the bulky, expensive construction of all the civils works. We think that is something that can be divided out and can reduce the size and complexity of the PPP and then focus the PPP elements on the crucial bits that matter, which is the trains, the systems they run on, and the people that they carry. I think the other thing which we would do is work through our concession agreement and just find the bits that never worked or that caused us a whole lot of disagreements and disputes.
Yeah.
And just try and settle those. If it was inappropriate risk transfer, well, let's talk about it. Let's take it out the next concession agreement.
Okay.
And then the final thing would be probably in terms of demand risk. I think it's a fiction that the private sector is willing to take demand risk fully on these types of projects. And we should examine that and say, are they best placed to carry that risk? And if not, well, then can we move over to that availability type payment that I was describing to you earlier?
In conclusion then of our interview, what were the main lessons? I know there are many lessons in the Gautrain doing the various podcast interviews on the brand, on the construction and so on. From management of a PPP, what would you say are the three most valuable lessons learned from this project?
That's a tough question. I've thought about this a lot, and I've come to the conclusion that a PPP process is only as good as the people who run it.
Okay. Let's just hang on to that and just take it in.
Yeah.
Because I think that's critical.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I think looking back to that first meeting in Simmons Street, I think it was, with Jack and his team, the people that I met then were still working on the project when I joined the GMA in late 2010.
Mm.
So fully 10 years of continuity, Jack's leadership. and had taken it through a whole range of stages in the project and in South Africa as well. And the team had managed to adapt and grow and yet remain intact. The second one perhaps is project leadership. And there I would say on a political level, it's been superb. You know, premier after premier has backed the Gautrain, as well as the administrations in Gauteng. And then on a GMA level, the continuity of having a strong CEO previously, the project leader in Jack, has really been essential. I've seen a lot of other projects with strong leaders who haven't continued through, and the project suffers. It really does. So that continuity is very, very important. I think that the third one is just the power and the necessity of having government financial backing. That first investor conference in 2000, I think the first question was, what is National Treasury's view of this project? Yes, it looks well and good, but is there funding for it?
Yeah.
And having the MEC of Finance on the stage being able to say, yes, we back it. And then jump forward to 2006, having Trevor Manuel stand up in Parliament and announce in his budget speech that there is funding for Gautrain.
Yeah.
Absolutely essential and a key success factor.
We have been with Mr. William Duxk on the Gautrain project as a PPP. We've come to the end of our interview. William, thank you very much for joining us. I don't know if you have any other parting shot or last words of wisdom for us before we conclude.
Thank you very much. This has been great wandering back through and reminiscing back through some recent history. I think for me, the final statement that I want to make, and hopefully there are listeners out there who are contemplating a PPP, is that don't make short-term decisions. Don't avoid doing a PPP because of a time constraint. Embrace the benefits and work towards realizing them, and it will pay off.
Thank you very much, William. You've been listening to the Gautrain Talks podcast station. To listen to this and more, please follow us on our Twitter page and log on to our website, gautrain.co.za. Thank you.